It is time to bring in people that need no passwords to join us. It is time to bring in David and Marcy from the Berkshire Edge online. You can find them, of course, at theberkshireedge.com, theberkshireedge.com. And here is the David and the Marcy. Good morning.
Good morning. Good morning.
Yeah, good morning.
There we go.
We haven't been out yet.
It's slightly better now. So
it is, and there's enough light to make a difference.
David, the whole thing is, and Marcy, when you go out at 4:30 in the morning, and all of a sudden you just hit that cold air, it's wow,
vile.
Hello.
Yeah. Well, lucky for us, we can stay home and talk to you. We don't need to go out, and we haven't. But we will very shortly.
All right. Now, I actually have been talking about this on the air since I saw it at theberkshireedge.com a couple of days ago. For the first time in a long time, the Great Barrington Select Board is no longer, right now at odds
not
with the
Berkshire. Not at this moment.
With the Berkshire Hills Regional School District over the budget.
Well, the tradition is that the school district proposes a budget. This is, we're all talking about town meeting, which is coming up in May. But right now is when the select board and the school district are you know, fashioning their budgets with their various committees. And for the first time in a long time, apparently the school district's budget does not upset the select board in Great Barrington, because Great Barrington, we're in a regional school district, so there are three towns that have to fork over the budget, and Great Barrington has the largest share of that. And usually there's a fight over the and some acrimony about the school district's budget that usually passes, but there's lots of grumbling and this year, apparently not, and I don't know whether it's what that's about.
Well,
it's good.
My first thought was that you've got your first legal marijuana shop in Great Barrington, maybe.
Oh, so we're going to have tons of money. I see. Right.
Well, no.
Right.
No.
Several.
People are just mellowed out.
I'm talking about them smoking.
Yeah, and they can spend it all. You know, but the revenue must be there already. Right?
Maybe they just leveled out after having a few bowls.
that's true. I mean.
Well, no, they took money from another pot, from a sort of reserve.
Yeah, they have a money. There's a reserve fund for the town that they can tap every so often to relieve the amount that they're going to assess the property owners to make up the budget, to make up the town expenditures. But this is the first time, really, in a long time that I can remember that there's not this bitter fight. And it's also true on the school district budget just went whizzing through without any, I mean, on their side, went through without too much trouble. So it's an odd, I don't know what it is. But
you're right. The acrimony that came last year, especially in the year before, was intense.
Yeah. It's not. It doesn't seem to be there this year for some reason.
Well, that's a good thing, actually.
It is. But it's, you know, the acrimony was always. It's not so much. I mean, the acrimony is that Great Barrington pays so much less, so much more than the other two towns in the school district.
Well, that's because they send more.
They send more kids.
But
it's not based on property values, which so many school taxes are. It's based on how many kids you send to school. And you have a town like Stockbridge, which is one of the three towns in the school district, where 60% of the homes in Stockbridge are owned by second homeowners. So they're not sending kids to school, but they have high property values. And if the school tax were based on property values, Stockbridge would be paying much more than it is. So Great Barrington is feeling that it ends up becomes an enormous part of our local tax.
But, you know, this is an interesting, I think, if I were to guess, one of the reasons that it's not such a big and acrimonious debate this year is that there's not before the three towns in the district a proposal for, you know, redoing the high school, which has to, there's a committee that's looking into that again, or continuously, but the high school is, what, 51 years old now, and it needs some work. Among other things, it needs to be wired for the internet, but and its roof leaks. But the thing is that, you know, the character of this area is changing or evolving, and it's not clear where it's going because the population of students is declining.
And the population of adults is aging.
So what is, you know, I think in this kind of uncertain future, it's difficult for, you know, people here to...
Older people on fixed income, to people without kids.
To you know, get behind a massive multi-million-dollar expenditure to, you know, redo the high school.
Right, that's always,
they need it.
That's always a question that, of course, is the same here in Connecticut and over in New York State.
Yeah.
We all have an aging population, that the school population is decreasing, and yet mandates from states and other things really add to increases in budgets where they almost become to the range and taxpayers are almost paying private school dollars.
That's true, right? But I'm not sure what's going to if you know, this is a permanent kind of characteristic of our population here, is that it's going to be just retirees, you know, it was second homes, because there's I don't know what kind of economic development could occur, that at least it's not clear yet, which could, you know, encourage young families to live here. So we'll see.
All right. Story number two, and this is an interesting story because it's something that happens all along. There's something successful that has started locally, and for many, many years, it's successful, and it fills a void, maybe a void that not everybody wanted to get into. But the Shopper's Guide has now been purchased by the Berkshire Eagle.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah, that's interesting, isn't it? I mean, you know, the Shopper's Guide was built up by the Restinger family and here. And
they've been running it for 50 years.
They've been running it for 50 years. And they're, you know, they just want to retire. So,
there's no one in the family who wants to take it over.
No, none of the younger kids want to, you know, they're coming along, want to do it.
But it has been, you know, I'm not sure how it's been lately, but certainly, you know, over, is it 25 or 50 years that they've been running it? I think but anyway,
51.
51 years. Over the years, it has been enormously lucrative. I mean, it's, you know, it's a cash cow. It's a newspaper filled with ads. That's all it is. They have barely any content except for a little bit of...
Well, they have to have some content in order to fulfill the second... Well, they're mailed, they're second class mail, so they have to have a certain percentage of content.
It's one of those mailers that people and think they don't throw it away. They wait for it and they look through it. It really is amazing.
I mean, I yes and no. I mean, I think, you know, I mean, I wonder. I see enormous numbers of them. I mean, at the post office that are right in the trash barrel at the post office. So, you know, I'm just not sure. I mean, I think they say that they mail out 20,000 of them, and you know, I've always wondered what percentage of them actually get read.
Well, it's going to help the Berkshire Eagle, as you said, a cash cow for now.
Well, but I, but lately, but in the last few years, you know, again, I don't know their finances at all, and we're, of course, wondering what the Eagle's going to do with it. But, you know, lately it has seemed thinner than it was in the past. And, you know, they are feeling the same competition from Internet advertising that every other newspaper is. So, you know, we're curious to know what the, I mean, and the Eagle already has a classified section, so, which comes out, you know, which they mail out every Friday. It's a, it's an advertising section that they mail out, so I assume that they are going to beef that up. But we, you know, who knows?
All right, I want to move on to the next story because it's back to school. And I like I like your headline that, that you put here. Great Barrington selectmen are peeved at what they termed the, quote, glacial pace, end quote, of negotiations to redevelop the former Housatonic Elementary School building.
Well, you know, the Housatonic School has set in the little hamlet of Housatonic, which is the, you know, a little village in Great Barrington. And it's been, you know, it's one of the, it's a, it's a massive elementary school, and when this, when the school district, when there became a regional school district, you know, a new elementary school for all three towns was built over by Monument Mountain, and the three or four individual elementary schools for the towns, I think there were four of them altogether, were closed. And so the question is, here's this handsome building in the middle of the village of Housatonic, empty, without and what to do with that, with that property, which sits kind of in the core of the village, you know. It has a lovely, it has a playground, several playgrounds and a ball field in front, but it's sitting there absolutely empty. And it's falling apart too. I mean, its roof leaks. And to do anything with it is there've been a number of proposals, but it's very expensive because of the amount of asbestos that has to be removed from the building. So it's a question of what to do. Now they have a proposal to redevelop it, but another proposal for redeveloping it. I mean, I can remember over the last 10 years or so, there've been two or three. Near misses, you might say, for that Housatonic school, where people come up with plans to do something about it, and they just never come to fruition.
You know, you can go no further than going across the state line to Hillsdale, New York, on Route 22.
Yeah. And well, take, yes, that's
yeah,
right.
Take
right,
a look
exactly.
at
exactly
beautiful
take
a, building.
A beautiful,
yeah.
beautiful,
but on
and
the
big.
Other hand,
it's huge too.
But
yeah.
that's not right in the middle of a residential
no.
area. You
but,
know, it's not, I mean, it's sort
but,
of.
But it goes along with reusing it for something because it's right on a highway. It's big.
Yeah.
It's got it had a pool.
Yeah.
There's a building that would be perfect for mixed use housing, apartments, whatever. These buildings can be repurposed. Armenia turned their old school into a town hall. They have various offices. They invite other people in to do things. They have now have what used to be an auditorium is being repaired again. I mean, you can recycle these buildings.
You can. And in Housatonic, for instance, there's a big mill complex, which was a clothing mill back in the day called Monument Mills. And it's it really dominates the landscape in this little village, but they've been unable to find to repurpose it, and the buildings are really in dire shape. So, you know, this school building is just one example of how of it kind of our failure actually collectively to find a way to reuse and redevelop these buildings. And these structures that dominate a town landscape. I mean, there are lots of them around in New England too.
It's amazing how many there are
that
could be repurposed. You know, your next story is so interesting. I always think about when there's talks of climate change and global warming. I think back to A Christmas Carol, and they show England with lots and lots of snow. And your columnist points out that America was born in an era of climate change. You know, that's that there is obviously, I guess, a global timetable, but climate change probably now more enhances it.
Well, remember, we know a little bit about that, and what happened back in about was the beginning of the 19th century. There was a volcanic explosion in the South Pacific, and it filled the atmosphere with ash that filtered the sun, and there was some serious cold weather that struck New England right when the United States was being formed, and it was very, very cold, and the summers were very short, and it was in a way global cooling at that point. So the point, I guess, that Carol Owens is making in her column is that, you know, the climate is not is changeable. I mean, on a global level.
Well, it's
given certain circumstances.
It's funny you mention that when there was a big about 4 or 5 years ago, a volcanic eruption that disrupted plane traffic and everything like that.
Right.
It happened in the summer.
Yeah.
If you remember, that's the winter when we got a lot of snow, an above normal amount of snow. So climate change does include things other than humans. It does include volcanoes and things like that. But it's interesting when you look back at the years and you compare it to other, like you say, volcanic or other events that happen.
Yeah, but her point is that, you know, things can change, and it can change rather rapidly too.
Yeah.
She's not a weather scientist, an atmospheric scientist, but historically, she's accurately pointed out that you know, climate can change.
Well, it used to be you couldn't argue with history, but now everything's changed in the past couple of years. So. But history.
Well, I love her comment that it used to be that the weather was a safe topic. You could talk about, you didn't talk in polite society about religion or taxes.
Well,
or money.
In Connecticut, it was religion.
Stick to two topics, dear: the weather and his health.
Religion and taxes.
Yeah, but now the weather is not safe because we have great disagreement.
But you know what? People love great disagreements. But better to disagree over the weather than something else.
But Alina, it never never stops at the weather. Okay.
But now the weather has implications.
Yes.
That are rather enormous.
So does everything.
If you're going to take
that view, then you can. It's a hop, skip, and a jump. Whichever topic you use.
Before the weather was considered a natural phenomenon, rather than a human influence phenomenon.
Yes, but that was before it got computerized. So, Marshall is trying to move us on. So let us do so.
Yes, okay. I am. I am trying to
All
get.
Right, well. So in other words, it's not that we can't talk, it's that we don't want to.
Yeah, okay. We want to move on to the hot or cold Bard College.
Well, we have a columnist, Ken Rote, who's a choreographer and a director over at Simon's Rock, and he's put together a rather lively series of events that he calls the Daniel's Party.
Daniel's Art Party.
Now, Daniel's is the Daniel Art Center at Simon's Rock, Bard College at Simon's Rock here in Great Barrington. But it is really going to be a great series of events that people should keep their eye on over the next year, which he's organized. And it's going to be fun. He's going to have a series of articles from time to time about the latest concoction that they've come up with, but the first one is a celebration of this enormous tree that is a 264-year-old oak that stands on the campus, and it's kind of an ecological environmental celebration in art of this tree. So I think that's an interesting connection between artistic expression and environmental and the environment and the land. So that's where they're starting.
Right. Now, they did, last year they debuted this Daniel's Art Party, and it was really very imaginative. They used the Daniel Arts Center, which is their big art center, in all kinds of ways. They had visual tours where you were taken from room to room where different tableaus were mounted by actors. They had a dinner party on stage with entertainment. It was terrific, and they're continuing. Ken Rote was also the organizer of that last year, so it's going to be very interesting this year.
All right, we want to wrap up with a real nice remembrance you have of André Previn.
Mm. Oh yeah, André Previn, who performed many times at Tanglewood.
In fact, they were planning to do a 90th birthday celebration
this summer of him, and he died, unfortunately. At 89. And David Edwards, one of our cultural writers, wrote just a really fine remembrance of him and his work and his life here. He's connected in various ways to the Birchers. It's a very lovely piece, and we can recommend it, of course.
Well,
yes.
Sometimes you have composers and musicians, their names just immediately evoke a feeling. André Previn is one of those. It's amazing how he's influenced so many different generations of people.
You know, he has, because I can remember as a kid, as a young man, hearing, getting records with his performances. You know, I think he performed, I'm trying to remember what he did. I think Rhapsody in Blue. I think I had a recording of him playing Gershwin's Rhapsody in Blue. He was also a popular musician, too.
Yeah.
So,
And I used to work, I worked for a while for the public television station in Pittsburgh, and of course they produced a concert series called Previn at the Pittsburgh, because he was conductor and artistic director for the Pittsburgh Symphony Orchestra, so he did that too. But he wrote movie music, composed movie music, he was big in Hollywood. He was very talented.
I think most people would remember always seeing his name on big movies.
That's right.
His score by André Previn.
Yeah.
Well, at that point, we've got to get out of here. But once again,
where are you going?
to the next conversation.
But we want to remind people that what we talk about is just a fraction of what you'll find at theberkshireedge.com.
Yep.
I mean, it's just some highlights. There are so many. Like I said earlier this week, I was talking on the air and crediting you about the story about Great Barrington. There's just so many stories that will influence you and get you informed. So keep up the good work.
Not to mention a huge calendar of events.
Yeah, that's
where
right.
We invite the public to post their own events for free on our site, and it'll reach thousands and thousands of people.
All right. Well, guys, have a good week, and we'll speak to you next week.
Okay. You guys,
bye.
Too. Okay.
Bye.
Take care.
Bye.
The Berkshire Edge on air here on Robin Hood Radio. Of course, you can find them at theberkshireedge.com.